Hello, this is World Business Report from the BBC World Service, where we bring you the latest in money, marketing, manufacturing, and yes, much, much more. Please review us, rate us, share us wherever you can. BBC podcasts are supported by advertising.
If you're hearing this, you're probably already listening to BBC's award-winning news podcasts. But did you know that you can listen to them without ads? Get current affairs podcasts like Global News, Americast and The Global Story, plus other great BBC podcasts from history to comedy to true crime, all ad-free. Simply subscribe to BBC Podcast Premium on Apple Podcasts or listen to Amazon Music with a Prime membership. Spend less time on ads and more time with BBC Podcasts.
Hello and welcome to World Business Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Sam Fenwick. We're talking about the money in your pocket today. Could workers in the UK be about to get an unexpected pay rise? Meanwhile, workers in the US are grappling with rising prices.
You can't really treat yourself. The little luxuries when you're working, when you're on a fixed income, they get less and less.
We'll check in with voters in Nevada ahead of next week's election. And the family feud to end all family feuds.
Rupert Murdoch has never set his kids up to be a united front. He's always played them off one another. And it's now those divisions that he is using against them.
What is the latest on the Murdoch family drama that could reshape the future of the world's most influential media empire? That's all to come here on World Business Report in the next 30 minutes. Let's start, though, here in the UK, where the government might be on the brink of bringing in a big increase in the country's minimum wage. It's being widely reported in lots of British newspapers that on Wednesday's budget, the chief finance minister, Rachel Reeves, will announce that the country's lowest paid workers will see a 6% rise in their pay packets. The BBC's Henry Zefferman says it'll get the backing of the Low Pay Commission. That's an independent body which advises the UK government on the minimum wage.
The new government very early on set a new remit for that Low Pay Commission, which said they wanted to make sure they boosted low earnings. Now, the Low Pay Commission looks at how an increase in the minimum wage would affect businesses. So there will be an element of consideration of a higher wage bill for businesses. But then when you add into that the inevitability, as it now is, that the employer's rate of national insurance will increase, I think you can see that this government could have to do some explaining, especially to small businesses, about why this won't be a burden that will just fall on them.
The UK's Labour government is expected to raise taxes and cut spending by nearly $60 billion US dollars to boost the economy and fund public services. They have promised not to target ordinary workers, but critics say that businesses might bear the brunt of those tax increases. Well, let's speak to a small business owner now. Namisha Raja is the owner and CEO of Nims Naturally. They make dried fruit and vegetable snacks. So how might you pay for the increased wage? Nim, explain that to us.
Hi, Sam. Well, exactly. I think what was just said was they have a lot to answer for, and we would like some explanations as to how Labour thinks that it can solve all of this country's social and economic problems by putting the heaviest burden on the shoulder of small and medium-sized, well, all-sized businesses. But, you know, 90% of businesses in this country are small and medium-sized. And we are workers. We work 60, 80 hours a week. And I just don't see how they can solve all these problems by targeting the very sector that invests in businesses, that innovates, creates the jobs and drives growth.
Well, there are those that would argue that you increase the wage of your workers and they spend more overall. They spend more in the economy.
Yes, but where do we get the money from the increase? We have to increase the cost of our goods that we sell. So the employee is going to have to pay more for the goods that they buy because we're all paying them more. Where does that money come from? We don't have, just as the government doesn't have a hidden, you know, stash of money, we don't have a hidden stash of money that suddenly, we've already had an increase from, I think, £10.42 to £11.44 pay increase this year.
So how might
over a pound an hour.
So how might you then pay for a 6% pay increase. Is that just going to come off your bottom line? Or, as you said, you may have to increase the prices of your goods, which I suppose then plays into inflation, doesn't it? Inflationary figures.
Exactly. And it's not as easy. I mean, it's not as easy for us to just say, oh, we'll just increase prices and that's all OK, because we can't. Actually, I say that that's what we would have to do in the long term. In the short term, and it's already happened, you know, 3 months ago, we had 18 members of staff. Two have moved on. We haven't replaced them because we've been waiting with bated breath and dreading this budget because it's been months in the making. And it just seems like it's the business owners that are going to suffer the most here. And I don't understand why that is. There's got to be surely a fairer way of doing this. Yes, you know, we understand we've got to raise taxes, but find a fairer way and not just punish employers who are also going to have to put up with a raft of measures coming in for new employee rights, which, again, we understand. But it's too much on us too soon over the next couple of years. I mean, we're just going to be drowning.
Thank you very much. Namisha Raja, the CEO of NIMS Naturally. And the minimum wage isn't just a big talking point here in the UK. It's become an election issue in the United States as well. We asked our reporter Stefania Gotza to take a look at how countries around the world approach the issue of wages for their lowest paid workers.
The first country to introduce a national minimum wage was New Zealand. It was as far back as 1894. Nowadays, most countries have these minimum rates as a safeguard against extremely low wages. Those in favor say minimum wages help reduce poverty, while those against believe they fuel inflation. Some of the countries with the highest minimum salaries are in Europe, where Luxembourg's at the top with $17.25 an hour. The biggest European economy, Germany, guarantees workers at least a 13.38 hourly rate. That's a bit less than on the other side of the world, Australia, where workers get $15.80 an hour, but it's double the rate paid in Japan, where employees get about $6.90 an hour.
Well, in the United States, Kamala Harris has pledged to raise the minimum wage in the United States to $15 an hour if she wins the election in a week's time. On a recent visit to McDonald's, her rival, President Trump, was asked by reporters if he'd increase the minimum wage if he became president. He said, "These people work hard. They're great." He also said that they're great franchises and that they produce a lot of jobs. In the US, wages for the lowest paid is a complicated topic, with different states setting different rules and different levels of pay, depending on workers' earned tips as well. So let's try and get to the bottom of it with economist Betsy Stevenson. She's a professor of public policy and economics at the University of Michigan and a former advisor to President Obama on labour market. So the federal minimum wage has been $7.25 for 15 years now, hasn't it, Betsy? But it's not as simple as that. Different states will have different rules. Just briefly, in a nutshell, explain what those different rules are.
The federal government sets a minimum wage for the country, but any state is welcome to set a higher minimum wage if they would like to. Because the federal minimum wage, you know, when you adjust for inflation, is quite low historically. It doesn't actually impact a lot of workers anymore. And a lot of states, 28 states, have passed higher minimum wages in the last 3 years. And a lot of them have put automatic adjustments in that mean that the minimum wage now adjusts for inflation, which our federal minimum wage doesn't. That means that about half our states are going to see another minimum wage increase on January 1st of this year. Is it either ramps up due to the law or ramps up due to inflation?
And so what might be, you know, an example of one of the higher states and how much a minimum wage might be and one of the lower paid states?
Well, the lower paid states would be ones that are still on the federal minimum wage of $7.25. But there are states now that have minimum wages above $16 an hour. Washington state is at $16.28, for example.
The last
Washington D.C. is at $17.50. So, you know, that's a full more than $10 above where the federal minimum wage is.
So if Kamala Harris wins, how likely is she through? How likely is she to get it through Congress? The last time Congress voted to increase the federal minimum wage, Lehman Brothers and Bear Stearns both existed, didn't they? Seems like a very long time ago.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, there's both an economic question about the minimum wage, which I do think your small business owner really kind of misunderstands what's going on with the minimum wage, which is minimum wages are about relative pay. And so the question is, how much should our lowest paid workers make relative to higher paid workers, relative to the return on capital? And you're trying to adjust that so that your lowest wage workers aren't earning that much less. And if there are businesses that are really relying only on very, very low wages, they're not very productive or profitable businesses.
But a lot of companies will rely on that. I think Carework, for example, rely on lots and lots of low-paid workers. There's an argument that you should increase those wages, but it costs the business.
Well, the business, that might be, it may be an issue where we need to increase wages and then increase what we charge for those businesses. Now, Carework's a very tricky one, because we're often dealing with people who are reliant on government reimbursements. And so that means the government needs to increase those reimbursement rates. But there are some businesses where they absolutely rely. People are dependent on somebody, say, coming into their house and doing work for $7.25 an hour that they wouldn't be willing to pay them $7.50 an hour. And I guess the question is that really the way we want to run society? Well, you know, is that work worth it if we wouldn't be willing to pay $7.50 or $8? Or in the UK's case, if you're not willing to pay over £11, is this really the best use of that person's skills?
Well, wages really matter because of the rising cost of living. And this is one of the most important issues which people will be voting on next week. Some voters have been telling our colleagues at KUNR Public Radio in North Nevada that they feel worse off now than they did 4 years ago.
When he was president, my paycheck lasted to groceries, to put gas on my tank, and to save. Right now, forget it. I am living paycheck to paycheck, almost to the penny. My mortgage payment just went up again.
We were averaging like $400 a month in groceries. It's closer to three times that now.
I hardly ever go out anymore. I now get to work from home, so that helps in gas. I don't eat a lot because I just can't afford it.
Almost 50% or more probably goes to our rent, which doesn't leave too much for other stuff. Plus, we have health care, we have cable, we have NV Energy. You add up everything and you sometimes just squeak it out. The little luxuries when you're working, when you're on a fixed income, they get less and less.
A lot of our rural communities don't have any access to healthcare whatsoever. The closest emergency room is 120 miles away in Salt Lake City. There is a very good local EMS company that does a very good job at getting folks to Salt Lake City. But, you know, that's also an expense that many families can't afford.
Some voters there in Nevada. Betsy Stevenson, things will start feeling a little bit better for people across the US, won't they, as inflation continues to come down?
Right. Inflation has pretty much stabilized now, right around, you know, where we would want it to be. So if your food, which everyone's talking about, was up 2.3% over the last 12 months, that's sort of normal. We expect food prices to be going up around 2%. But people are not used to the higher level of prices. They're frustrated about it. Wages have gone up for most people, but not all people. And that is going to be, you know, a problem. It's a tricky situation because inflation causes harm to some people, even as other people are getting bigger than expected wage increases.
Betsy Stevenson, Professor of Public Policy and Economics at the University of Michigan. Thank you very much for talking to us.
If you're hearing this, you're probably already listening to BBC's award-winning news podcasts. But did you know that you can listen to them without ads? Get current affairs podcasts like Global News, Americast, and The Global Story, plus other great BBC podcasts from history to comedy to true crime, all ad-free. Simply subscribe to BBC Podcast Premium on Apple Podcasts or listen to Amazon Music with a Prime membership. Spend less time on ads and more time with BBC Podcasts.
Today. You're listening to World Business Report from the BBC World Service with me, Sam Fenwick. We're going to move on now to talk about some big global companies that are announcing their quarterly results this week. One of them is HSBC. It says quarterly profits have jumped by 10%, rising to $8.5 billion before tax in the 3 months to the end of September, beating analyst expectations. Now, this comes after similar strong results from other UK rival banks, Lloyds, Barclays and NatWest. So can banking results tell us how the global economy is doing overall? Let's talk to Frances Coppola. She's an independent banking analyst. So what's happened at HSBC? Why these big profits?
Well, a lot of this actually comes from their wealth division, where they seem to be riding a wave of what we might call increased prosperity, actually in the Far East, among the Chinese, which, given that the Chinese economy has been in something of the doldrums in recent years, might be a good sign, because it might indicate that it's beginning to recover.
I mean, we talk about the China economy being in the doldrums, but they're still doing pretty well and they're still growing at, what, 5% or thereabouts, which some countries would look very enviously on, wouldn't they?
Well, of course, it's not a fully industrialised economy. It's a developing country rather than a developed one. Developed country economies tend to grow more slowly. They're more services oriented. They're not still developing production. And China does depend very much on its industrial production, so it grows faster for that reason. But it has been doing less well in recent years than it has done in the past. But, you know, now we do seem to be having this increase in wealth from the Chinese middle classes finding its way into banks like HSBC. And that might signal a reversal of its fortunes.
Now, HSBC has been talking about dividing its operations into Eastern and Western markets. Why does it want to do that?
Well, I think actually that this wave of prosperity in the Far East, and particularly in China, is part of the reason for it. That in a way, the Far East is a very different place from the UK. It's got this important UK, European, and to some extent North American franchise, and it also has the Far East, and they are very different. And in some respects, economically and culturally, they pull in opposite directions. So there are quite good reasons for managing them as separate units, and perhaps also with different targets, so that in the Far East they're very much tapping into this wave of prosperity, whereas in Britain their results are really coming from lending.
Now, other banks are performing well. What does that tell us about how the wider economy might be faring?
Well, again, this is a little bit of a success story. When banks do well, that's often a sign that the economy is beginning to turn around. Britain's had a rough ride in recent years, but now we're seeing banks turn in better performances in their UK markets. And for me, that's a bit of a leading indicator that the economy is beginning to turn the corner.
Frances Coppola, thank you very much for coming on to tell us about that. Let's have a look at some other big companies reporting their earnings this week. We've got Google's parent company, Alphabet. They'll reveal their performance later on today. Microsoft and Meta are set to follow up tomorrow, with Amazon and Apple. They're coming on Thursday. Now, also today, there has been the oil company BP and the fast food chain McDonald's. So Fiona Sincotta is our financial markets guest today. She's from Citi Index, and you're going to take us through all of these figures. Let's start with BP. Not quite as rosy as the banks. It's reported its weakest quarterly profits for almost 4 years, partly down to the global price of oil, but also, they say, falling margins in its refinery business. I wonder why refining oil is less profitable than it has been.
Okay, yes. So basically, we've seen refining margins falling, and that's basically due to weak demand. That's been affecting the profitability of that product. So, I mean, if we think due to slowing economic activity, particularly in manufacturing activity, and if we think particularly in Europe, we know that manufacturing activity has been in contraction. In China as well, we've seen that, and also in the US. So, and then we've also got the increased use of biofuels in place of this conventional petrol-based product. So that also is impacting demand and just impacting the profitability of refining.
And in their statement to the Stock Exchange, the CEO said that they had to focus on high value rather than high volume. So what does he mean by that, do you think?
Yeah, so I think there we're getting a sense that actually they're wanting to focus much more on those products which offer the or bring with them the higher margin products rather than the lower margin products which have impacted the profitability. So it just makes more business sense for them to have that higher profitable, more profitable product than
and
what
do
they've
we know
been seeing today.
What might they be talking about? Greener fuel, stuff like that.
Yes, yeah, exactly. That's what they're going to be looking at, because that's where the higher level of profitability is, rather than those sort of petroleum-based products and jet fuel, etc.
So we've also got an indication of how McDonald's is faring. Now, they're still investigating an E. coli outbreak. Has that impacted on their profits at all?
Okay, so that was really interesting, actually, because so they actually beat their forecasts for earning and revenue in the third quarter. Revenue was up 3% at $6.87 billion. And as you said, this came, well, these results come as they're sort of the share price has fallen on that E. coli breakout news. But actually, management have said that the outbreak is not expected to materially impact the business. So that does suggest that it's not expected to have a big impact on the quarter's figures going forward.
They've also been pushing a $5 summer value meal, haven't they, to try and entice customers in. Has that worked for them?
Yeah, you know, I think these promotions that have been going are extremely effective, and especially when we've been having these periods of sort of, you know, problems over cost of living, when there are concerns over still high interest rates, although they're falling. So, you know, these sort of promotions are exactly what works to bring the customers in.
Fiona Cincotta, thank you very much. Now we're going to move on to our final story of today and what's happened when Rupert Murdoch and his children went to court. It is a dramatic story which wouldn't be out of place in a Hollywood blockbuster. Rupert Murdoch wants to alter the family trust fund to give his eldest son Lachlan, who shares his father's conservative views, full control of the family business. But that angered his other children, Lachlan's brothers and sisters. The family ended up in court last month, but since then it's gone eerily quiet, leaving many of us wondering what transpired behind those closed courtroom doors. Gideon Long, our reporter, has found the whole thing very intriguing and he's been investigating. So what happened? Remind us of the background of the case, first of all.
So this trust, Sam, it was signed by Rupert Murdoch back in 1999, so 25 years ago now, and it was part of his divorce agreement with his second wife, Anna. And it basically gives their three children, plus another daughter from Rupert's first marriage, an equal stake in his estate. But it also, crucially, gives them equal voting rights in his companies. So this is not just about money. It's not just about inheritance. It's also about power in his companies after his death. Rupert Murdoch wants to change the terms of that trust, and he wants to give his eldest son, Lachlan, full control. Why? As you said, this is to do with his politics and his conservatism. His other children, notably Elizabeth and James, don't agree with his worldview. James, for example, is a climate activist. He said he'll vote for Kamala Harris in next week's election. Elizabeth is a media executive in her own right. She's criticised News Corp, Rupert Murdoch's company. He fears that they would take his companies in a different direction, and particularly Fox News. And that's why he's trying to strip those children of their voting rights and give them to his more conservative son. So that's the latest chapter in the friction between the children and their father, but it has been going on for quite some time. I've been speaking to Sarah Ellison, a reporter at the Washington Post. She's been following the Murdoch family and their empire for nearly two decades.
Rupert Murdoch has never set his kids up to be a united front and to agree with one another. He's always played them off one another. And it's now those divisions that he is using against them to try to cut the majority of them out of voting control of the trust. So it's not an ideal environment for the children. And Rupert has always set up this duality with his children where he cared about family and he cared about his business. But when push came to shove, he always chose the business over the family.
So Gideon, this case has been heard in a family court, which is very private. Will we ever know what the outcome of the case is?
Yeah, it's a really strange situation, very secretive. Rupert Murdoch has made it that way. He's chosen it that way. He decided to take this court action in Nevada because it has stricter court secrecy than many other US states. So not only are the hearings secret, but also the verdict of the judge or the probate officer, as they're called. So various media companies are challenging this secrecy, saying, look, this is important. It's not just about a family dispute. It's actually about the future of politics, the future of the media empire, and the future of democracy itself. So far, those bids have been unsuccessful. But there are a lot of journalists trying to find out what has been going on inside that courtroom, that courthouse in Reno. And there are a lot of people saying that, you know, we'll probably hear something on it from leaks as well. But it, for all we know, the judge, the probate officer, could have actually made a decision already, but we don't know that for sure. So I spoke to David Falkenflik. He's the media correspondent for National Public Radio, and he's the author of a book on the media empire.
I do think ultimately this information will become public as part of corporate filings because the shareholders are going to have to understand what the Murdoch Trust has decided. So I think there will be some disclosure. My guess is a lot of it will come in leaks, but it will be appealed. Either side that loses will appeal the verdict. It's possible both sides will appeal elements of the judge's ruling, depending on what he decides. And that appeals process can take a while to play out. So it's at once secretive. It's slow. This thing is likely to take some years to shake out if they don't find a way to settle it. And the real problem for Lachlan is he doesn't have the personal cash to buy out his siblings.
So that was David Falkenflik there, the media correspondent at National Public Radio.
That was Gideon Long talking to us. Thank you very much, Gideon. And if you want to hear more of how that drama is unfolding, then listen to Business Daily. You can find Business Daily by searching for Business Daily wherever you get your BBC podcast. Now, Fiona Sincotta is still with us. Fiona, how has this all affected the story that Gideon has just explained, the value of the businesses in the Murdoch empire?
Well, interestingly, I mean, if we have a look at Fox Corp and Newcourt share prices, they've actually risen and fairly strongly this year. So, I mean, Fox is up around 40% year to date, whereas News Corp is up just around 11% year to date. So, you know, that would suggest that this relatively strong performance is that, you know, shareholders and prospective shareholders are still looking to buy the share prices, the shares, and therefore the demand is strong and the price is up. So, doesn't seem to be too much of an impact on the share price so far.
Fiona Sincotta, thank you very much for joining us today on World Business Report. Thank you also to Gideon Long. That's all we have time for today. The producer was Lexi O'Connor. I'm Sam Fenwick. Thank you very much for listening. And don't forget, you can always get our podcast by searching for World Business Report.
If you're hearing this, you're probably already listening to BBC's award-winning news podcasts. But did you know that you can listen to them without ads? Get current affairs podcasts like Global News, Americast and The Global Story, plus other great BBC podcasts from history to comedy to true crime, all ad-free. Simply subscribe to BBC Podcast Premium on Apple Podcasts or listen to Amazon Music with a Prime membership. Spend less time on ads and more time with BBC Podcasts.